Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of Roman innuendo, all offered up by our panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, professors, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight, featuring commentary by progressive Peter Hanna, conservative Josh Cantrow, progressive David Masioka, and conservative Stephanie Trussell. Our program tonight coming to you from the National Radio Hall of Fame in Chicago, the Paul and Angel Harvey Studios. Nice to have you with us this evening. We have, again, another 2 hours of lots of discussion. In the second hour, primarily talking about politics and what is likely to happen in the Democratic Party and Michael Bloomberg's attempt to become the Democratic nominee for president. But last week, one of the big star makers, one of the big newsmakers was Bill Barr, the Attorney General of the United States. He engaged in a lengthy interview with ABC. He had lots to say. It dominated news. Let's take a look at some of the things the Attorney General had to say.
I'm not going to be bullied or influenced by anybody. If he were to say, you know, go investigate somebody because, and you sense it's because they're a political opponent, then an attorney general shouldn't carry that out, wouldn't carry that out. I have not discussed the Roger Stone case at the White House.
Peter Hanna joins us. He is a professor of law and progressive. You've not been a big fan of the president or the attorney general, but did the attorney, first of all, do you buy that that actually happened? No one's going to deny that. But was that are they in the cahoots? Are the president and the attorney general in cahoots with this story, do you think?
I think Bill Barr is a very intelligent man. I think he doesn't need to be handed a letter or a note from the president asking him to do X, Y, or Z. I think he's been very attuned to the president's desires throughout, you know, his tenure as attorney general. You know, he's had a very, very successful tenure in an administration that's, you know, hemorrhaged people. So I think, you know, all President Trump has to do is tweet or intimate or suggest, and he's found his bagman in Bill Barr.
Josh Cantrow, you might see it a little bit differently.
I do. I think that Bill Barr has been an outstanding attorney general in a cabinet that is full of really outstanding individuals. Looking at all that this administration has accomplished, one would be hard-pressed not to reach that conclusion. I do think that Attorney General Barr was correct to push back on the president based on the perception that he was doing the president's bidding in a situation where it was clearly unfair that Roger Stone.
So you buy that it's real? You buy it that it's real?
I buy it that it's real, absolutely.
David Masioka, you're also a progressive writer. Do you buy that this little brouhaha between the president and the attorney general is real, or was it fabricated?
No, it's a pro wrestling stunt in which, you know, two competitors go into the ring and pretend to punch each other and hate each other, and then backstage they're giving each other high fives, job well done. Bill Barr has proven himself nothing less than obsequious and sycophantic in his service to President Trump. Even when Trump either blurs the line between legality and criminality or just marches right over it, stampedes right over it. So it is only real.
Do you think when he says, though, that making my job impossible to do, do you think that's the words of a sycophant, even if it's a fake thing
that's,
to say?
That's the only possibility for authenticity here, in that one wouldn't want the getaway driver in a bank robbery to stand outside the car with a sign that says, robber, enter vehicle here.
Yeah.
The tweets and the obnoxious public statements would certainly make Bill Barr's job challenging. So that's the only possible authentic moment in that state.
Stephanie Trussell is our other conservative. Stephanie, we have some doubters over here on the progressive side as to whether this was real or not. Do you think it was real?
Well, I'm going to take it for face value that it was real, but it just amazes me how anyone who's loyal to Trump, and initially I thought everybody loved Bill Barr. He was this person on both sides. They thought he was a man of integrity. And suddenly, after everything we've been through, and he's still supporting our president, so he's got to be a sycophant. It reminds me of me being a Trump supporter, so it's not good enough just to attack Trump. Now it's anyone that still loves Trump or still supports him at this point. This is such a small little blip on what's going on. I'm excited about what Trump has done since he's been president. So this is just a distraction to me.
Do you believe that most Trump supporters would understand if the attorney general or any cabinet member were to say to the public, hey, you're making my job more difficult with your tweets? Wouldn't a lot of Trump people agree with that?
Well, I think Bill Barr's from a different generation. Well, everybody's tweeting now. That was so exciting when Obama announced who his vice president was via a tweet. It was okay when we used tweeting on the left. But that's who Trump is, and that's how he's getting his message out. If he waits for the media to tell us what he's doing, we'll never hear about it. So for him not to agree with him being an older gentleman from an old school and not understanding what Trump is doing, it's okay. Let him give his opinion. But I don't think this is a big Peter. Issue right now.
Yeah, no, I would just say respectfully, I think the comparison to Obama tweeting about the vice presidential pick is not the same as interfering with a judge preparing to sentence someone. One is sort of intended to interfere with the procedure in a federal criminal prosecution. The other is, political announcement. So, I mean, I don't think that Bill Barr is some sort of like out of touch, non-contemporary of Trump's who doesn't know what tweeting is. I mean, he's a very savvy person. And I also have to take issue with what you said about everybody loved Bill Barr. I think at his confirmation hearing this time around, obviously he has previous service with another Republican administration, he said the right things. He said, I'm going to be independent. I'm going to be, I'm going to think on my own, equal practice, ever against everyone. But that's not been the case. He has been sycophantic. He has been obsequious. Candidly, if I can just complete my point, he's a disgrace to the Department of Justice.
But on the issue of Roger Stone, Bill Barr has argued that he had made a decision basically to ask for a reduction in the sentence before the president tweeted. And it made it more difficult when the president tweeted. That was one of the references to this quote I read.
Yeah.
That really the president made it difficult for him to do what he thought was right and was going to do anyway. Is that a possibility that Barr looked at the evidence here and thought as he believed, which you disagree with?
It is the remotest of remote possibilities. I clerked for a federal judge in the Southern District of New York. I watched numerous criminal trials. Many of my friends work in the Department of Justice. I've served as a pro bono attorney in federal criminal trials also and many federal trials. The attorney general does not get involved in a single actual sentencing. It is completely beyond the pale, and it speaks to the guy's real motives, which are keeping his boss happy at all costs.
There's so much to respond to. First of all, that Bill Barr is a, quote, disgrace to the Department of Justice.
That's an opinion, Josh.
That is an opinion that is really wrong, because Bill Barr was confirmed back in 92, overwhelmingly as Bush, as the first Bush's AG, very, very well respected. But I'm saying that he has a record, and that he has a record, and he's brought nothing but honor to the Department of Justice that had been highly politicized in the Obama administration, with all of Obama's pushing his Department of Justice to get involved in various police issues. So how is this any different? To me, that was a lot worse. This is one single case. Obama wanted his Department of Justice to get involved in Ferguson and all of these other cases.
One more point to discuss when we return. I'm Bruce Dumont. Don't go away.
A new exhibit from the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Stay tuned. Rock on TV. Artifacts from the Jackson 5, Sonny and Cher, Elvis, Cyndi Lauper, ZZ Top, Eric Clapton, and more. Now at the Museum of Broadcast Communications, 360 North State Street, Chicago. From Bandstand to Gaga, let's rock on TV. For info and tickets, visit museum.tv.
You have the right to know. The right to know about culture. The right to know about the economy. The right to know about technology and to know about sports. You have the right to know about education and politics and the weather. You have the right to know what's happening abroad and in your backyard. But above all else, you have the right to know that this right is under attack, and we must work to protect it. Because in order to be free, we must be informed. Understand the threats. ProtectPressFreedom.org.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Nice to have you with us this evening. Roger Stone, obviously a lot of Democrats believe that the president and the attorney general are trying to weigh in and reduce Roger Stone's sentence because of the close relationship, alleged close relationship that he has with the president. David Masiotra, I want to ask you the question. Do you think that Roger Stone would have been indicted had he not been a close friend of the president's?
Yes, I do, but I can also intellectually multitask. 7 to 9 years does seem excessive and draconian. However,
does everybody agree with that? Peter, do you agree with that?
I mean, no, I don't at all. I think that if you look at the sentencing guidelines, I think someone who has, you know, 14 grams of cocaine or crack in their bag could face 20 years.
Well, that's excessive so, I mean, and draconian too.
Yeah, maybe that's a broader conversation. I think the bottom line is what the sentencing guidelines say. That's produced by a totally nonpartisan group.
That was my second point. I was going to say I can object to the sentencing guidelines as they're currently written,
broadly,
but also view Trump's attempt to interfere with the sentencing and Barr operating at the behest of Trump as quite dangerous and damaging to our system of separation of powers that is meant to protect the integrity of the courts. And to Josh's point before the break, you know, we're constantly seeing these gymnastic maneuvers to compare Trump to Obama in such a way that would make Simone Biles jealous. But Obama's involvement in the Ferguson affair was to ask his Department of Justice to study systemic biases within the police department there and elsewhere. And the conclusion of that study actually affirmed the Ferguson district attorney's or prosecutor's decision not to press charges against Officer Wilson, but found that the police had consistently violated the civil rights of its black residents. It did not get involved in sentencing, and it was not done to protect an ally of the administration. That's a key distinction. What Trump is doing here is protecting a friend and ally, which is a grotesque abuse of power. The Obama administration was attempting to study a pattern of injustice.
When he pardons him, what's your reaction going to be to that? Because he has the right to pardon, right?
Yes, and I would say if he were to commute the sentence or pardon, that falls within his powers.
Stephanie, you have a comment.
Well, you know, what he's guilty of with everyone else, anyone who's associated, who's in the Trump camp, they go through a sifting that no other administration, their cabinet members had to go through. He's guilty of just being on Team Trump. And what this message is a warning to anybody who's thinking about joining that team, are your taxes in order? Is everything, every dot, you know, every T crossed, everything dotted? I don't know if I could withstand it. I try to do everything, you know, on the up and up. That's what it's all about, going the Sarah Palin sifting of Trump
himself has never shown his tax returns.
He doesn't have to. Why should he?
How could you make the point that the Trump administration has gone through a vetting process more rigorous than anyone else?
There's no doubt that greater scrutiny is placed on Trump supporters, on Trump potential cabinet officials, Trump judges, whatever it is, because that's just the way it is. How does Andrew McCabe get off for lying to the FBI, non-prosecutorial decision to not even prosecute him when he lied, when the inspector general found out that he lied? How does the official...
Can I at least offer an option? Someone in the FBI who was working directly for the attorney general, they made a decision that notwithstanding what all the Trump supporters would like, they'd like to see, you know, Andrew McCabe in prison. The attorney general, I assume, signed off on that decision.
Yep.
They were not going to indict Andrew McCabe. So if you believe them that they're operating under a position of integrity on one point, is this not another example of integrity, even though politically you may disagree with it?
Let me explain that. We don't know that the attorney general got involved in that. What I'm talking about is the bureaucracy. And I was not a deep stater. I mocked people who talked about the deep state. But there is a deep state, and it is the permanent bureaucracy, Republicans and Democrats, who hate this president at all costs. I think Andrew McCabe is actually a Republican, by the way. But in any event, they
those decisions are made at lower levels. Bill Barr was going to get involved because it's absolutely ridiculous that Roger Stone, who is like 73 years old, is going to serve 7 to 9 years in prison for lying to Congress. That is crazy.
So Barr was going to get involved.
Just so I understand, you believe that Bill Barr would get involved, and justifiably so, in your opinion.
Yes.
He would get involved with a Roger Stone sentencing, trying to reduce it.
Yes.
But he wouldn't be involved in the signing off as to whether McCabe was going to be indicted or not?
That's going to be at the level
of... What's your take just on that particular...
I'm sorry, I have to kind of scope out. I mean, it's shocking to me to see this much compassion from conservatives for this 70-year-old criminal with a giant Richard Nixon tattooed on his back.
Which doesn't make him a criminal.
Oh my gosh.
You guys got to chill for a second. Yeah. I didn't say that was against the law. It probably should be, but right. I digress. The point I make is it's just shocking to hear all this compassion. Oh, my God, a 7 to 9 year sentence for Roger Stone. Where is this compassion for the tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of people of color, black, Latino, Hispanics, okay, who end up suffering the brunt of these awful sentencing guidelines? Where is the scrutiny?
This president stopped doing
that. He's taking care of that.
You're interrupting.
First step, second chance act. He's all over
thing,
that.
Peter, if you're familiar with the show's format, you'll understand that when you talk over me, you antagonize me, and I can't finish my point.
Okay, so
I'm going to try. Josh, please, that's okay, the biggest pot kettle moment I've heard on the show ever. Uh-huh. So this compassion seems to be missing for the people who suffer the most as a result of sentencing guidelines. And now we have this president who interferes with an individual's sentence by telegraphing to his stooge, Bill Barr, that he needs to get involved and overthrow these prosecutors. Stephanie and then David.
And that's what I love. You know, don't say black and brown people. There's two different issues. And I hate they're trying to color people of color. We're two different issues. But when you're talking about criminal justice, and what did you listen to the State of the Union speech? This president is getting it done. You can placate and promise them. Wow. They've been promising that for decades. They're going to take care of us. Trump comes along. He's getting people out of jail that were over-sentenced. Second Chance Act, First Step Act. Don't tell me. He's about getting it done. And you can pretend that this isn't happening. As a woman, a black woman who grew up on the west side of Chicago, you're going to tell me about sentencing and being poor. No, you're not going to come. No.
You can be a black woman who grew up on the west side of Chicago. I'm an immigrant.
You
grew up in Brooklyn.
Don't placate.
Good for you, then.
When they start trying to divide us into these categories. Trump is doing a lot for black Americans, for all Americans.
I'm not dividing any categories. You could look at the numbers yourself.
But when you said compassion for Republicans, like you can be a compassionate Republican. That's why I'm pro-life. And that's why I defend everybody. We're very compassionate.
Yeah, you misquoted me, and that's not what I said. I didn't say compassionate
some
Republicans.
Compassion from Republicans.
I said it's shocking. No. I said she misspoke.
Democrats who would kill, targets black babies in the womb?
You said, folks, that's not what I said. I said
Peter,
it's shocking to me to see all this compassion.
I have a lot of compassion.
For Roger Stone.
Peter.
That is sickening.
Wait a second.
Okay. We can't interrupt him, but he can interrupt us.
I know. I responded to you.
That's okay.
I responded to you.
Let's remember something, okay?
I'm a white guy who grew up in the suburbs.
We won't hold that against you.
Okay. Right, please don't.
Okay, yes, actually, you speak for a lot of people listening to this program. But my question is this. Folks, if you talk over anyone, whether it's part of your strategy or not, the people out there in Radio Land can't hear either of you, okay? And I will tell you, based on previous conversations when we have a very heated show, the people that react to me on email – they don't like it. They don't like it, and they turn it off. I don't want people turning this program off. We have very spirited conversation, which I like a lot, but really one voice at a time. David.
Two things. If one can recall, it seems like ancient history now because the news cycle moves at such a rapid pace. When Bill Clinton met with Loretta Lynch on the tarmac of the airport, the entire world had to stop because of the impropriety of it. No one even knows what happened in that conversation. There's deniability. I didn't think he should have had that meeting, but he did. The Republicans who wanted to stop the entire movement of the country over that meeting are now defending President Trump publicly intervening in a sentencing. So that hypocrisy and inconsistency is quite interesting. to Peter's point about this displaced compassion.
I want Josh to respond to just that point. What do you think? Does David have a point here that there's a disconnect?
I don't think he has a point at all. What we saw there was Bill Clinton and Loretta Lynch meeting, highly inappropriate when the Democratic candidate for president was under investigation. That is a lot different than a bit player like Roger Stone, who, you know, the Democrats want to make into this highly important
Trump figure. It's interference with the legal system.
So there's interrupting there. So there's interrupting there. But what I'm saying is that it's two different things. Roger Stone is just not that big of a deal. That's the point I'm making. He's not that big of a deal. Compared to that situation.
I wanted to also add to Peter's earlier point about this misplaced compassion. Benjamin Ferenz, the last living Nuremberg prosecutor, said that the Trump administration's policy of family separation at the southern border constitutes a crime against humanity. Where's the compassion for those families, for those children?
Can we, oh, my goodness.
Roger.
Wait.
Roger Stone, break out the world's smallest violin.
Where's the compassion for descendants of slaves that are now being put behind illegals, resources taken from black people? You can come with me on the west side of Chicago, and I'll show you how the Hispanic neighborhood is booming, and my neighborhood where I grew up is dying. You owe me first. The country owes my – I'm an ancestor of enslaved Americans. The border issue, that disproportionately affects black people.
We've got
a
pause. Back shortly from Chicago.
The economy is not working for everybody, especially those in jobs where unscrupulous businesses keep wages lower by hiring millions of illegal workers. Those businesses could use the government's E-Verify system to prevent illegal hiring, but they refuse. What's best for the country? Let businesses continue to hire illegal workers or require E-Verify, raise wages, and recruit left-behind Americans? See what voters want at eVerifyWorks.com. Paid for by Numbers USA, because numbers count.
Every year, millions of Americans use opioids to manage pain. And reliance on opioids has led to the worst drug crisis in American history. That's why the CDC recommends safer alternatives, like physical therapy, to manage pain. Physical therapists treat pain through movement, hands-on care, and patient education. No warning labels required. When it comes to your health, you have a choice. Choose physical therapy. Visit moveforwardpt.com to find a physical therapist in your area.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago, and in case you just tuned in, we have a real feisty group tonight, and we're going to let them introduce themselves, and we begin with our conservative Republican, Stephanie Trussell.
Hi, I am a grandmother, a mom, a wife in the suburbs. I had a radio show on WLS for 7 years, and now I am a radio host on fill-in host on 560 AM.
And Peter Hanna.
My name is Peter Hanna. I'm an attorney. I focus on constitutional matters, civil liberties matters, privacy and cybersecurity. I work with a lot of nonprofits, legislators, policymakers on progressive issues. And as always, it's a pleasure to be here.
And came to the country when you were a young boy.
Yes, I was actually born in Egypt and came to the country when I was a little bit under 2 years old.
And you became a citizen. Your parents became citizens and you became a citizen.
That's right.
How long ago?
Well, the paperwork is not – no, I'm kidding. Many years ago. I was 6 or 7 years old.
Okay. So. Josh Cantrow.
I am a Jewish conservative, also a cybersecurity lawyer. I have 3 kids, and we live in the city in Lakeview. And for the sin of being an outspoken Jewish conservative, I have people in my community, in my neighborhood – and unfortunately, even distant family members who absolutely hate me for that.
Welcome.
Will it be difficult for you, given all that the president has done in reaching out to the state of Israel, and you've been a defender of his positions for the last couple of years on this program, how difficult is your life going to be if Michael Bloomberg emerges as the Democratic nominee for president?
Oh, it's not going to be difficult for me at all. I'm going to support Trump 100%.
How about your friends?
And I was a never-Trumper as well.
Oh, okay. So, converted.
Yes. My friends, who are Trump supporters, they're going to support Trump. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of support for Trump in the Jewish community. It's quiet. But those quiet Trump supporters look to me. I have 300,000 followers on social media. They look to me. I write. I speak out. I come on this show. I do other shows. I appreciate the opportunity, Bruce, you've given me to come on this show because there are so many quiet Trump supporters out there in the Jewish community.
Okay. David Masiotra joins us as well. David?
Yes. Pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me as well. I'm a writer, a political columnist with Salon, and a music critic with No Depression, the author of several books, including Mellencamp American Troubadour, and my forthcoming book, due out October 15th, 2020, I Am Somebody, Why Jesse Jackson Matters.
Great. We will look forward to having you on to talk about that book.
I hope so. Thank you.
One of the other big issues was that the president decided that he was going to get rid of people who he doesn't like, and he marched them out of the White House. He had every right to do it, right, Josh?
Absolutely.
Did he do it at the right time?
No, he should have done it a long time ago. There were too many deep staters who were working against him, leaking to the media, going off and writing books, writing anonymous columns in the New York Times, doing all sorts of things. This should have happened a long time ago. Good riddance to these people.
David Masiotra, is that, you agree? He has every right to do it, right?
Yes, of course. However, it's disconcerting because it's yet another indication of Trump's identity confusion. He seems to mistake himself for a monarch. And he seems to dictate his presidential power with dictatorial authority. And the majority of his supporters seem to affirm him in that assertion. And it's dangerous and worrisome.
Why is it dangerous if he fires someone that he doesn't trust, Peter?
I think kind of something even the folks on the other side here conceded, you know, sometimes the appearance can be problematic. That's, you know, ostensibly why Bill Barr went on TV to diffuse the appearance of impropriety. And I think it's dangerous when, you know, we've seen the next in the Trump cycle. He does something really terrible and awful. He gets away with it and then he doubles down. So I think this is the beginning of Trump doubling, tripling, quadrupling down on behavior that is completely, you know, very dangerous and sort of erodes public trust.
Does it, Stephanie?
Well, you know.
I assume you have nothing. Let me ask you this. Do you think that marching him out of the White House the way he marched him out, was that necessary?
Well, it's kind of like to me, he had to. I'm fine with that. You have to understand, he was an outsider, never been a politician. He doesn't know how it works. And so he had a little bit of trying to learn the lay of the land. And as you said, Josh, there are never Trumpers that are after him, the Democrats that are after him, the media that is after him. Now that he's kind of got a feel of what's going on, he had to let people know. No more of the leaks, no more of this, not being loyal to this president. And I don't have a problem with him marching them out. He had to show everybody an example. This is what we're expecting now. You need to be on Team Trump or just you got to go. And everybody, he has the right to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, the leaking, the undermining, all of the people working against him, that's got to go. And despite all of that, look at what this administration has accomplished. It is incredible.
It is.
Let's go to Bonnie in Crown Point, Indiana. You're on the air.
Oh, hello, guys.
Hello.
I was really annoyed before the last section, the last break.
Yes, uh-huh.
The last thing that David referred to was separating the children at the border. And I am so lucky. I have a job where I can listen to these hearings on my phone while I'm working. And as I'm, you know, every one of these ICE, people and Homeland Security and all that, they've been hauled up before Congress for numerous hearings. And constantly, the reasoning they give, and there is reasoning, the reasoning they give is that, first of all, they might not be able to prove that the child and the adult are actually related. The child could have been rented to the parents. There's no documentation. Maybe the adult that's with the claims to be the parent has, like, warrants for rape and stuff. So there are reasons that those children were separated. And if these parents really cared, they wouldn't put these children in this position. So, you know, don't go into that area. And now you're talking about, you know, you're talking about what the president has the right to do and what he doesn't. you're right. You know, he does have the right to fire people who aren't loyal. Remember, Obama fired every single ambassador before he took office. Keep that in mind. Every single one.
Yeah, that's the president's, you know, initiative. Yeah, well, they're welcome to do that. Right. And typically, that's what happens when a new administration comes in. They release every ambassador. Yeah. So
and every
maybe
U.S. attorney.
Look at history.
Right. But what we're saying is that they have that right. In other words, it seems to me that the challenging the president on the right to do a lot of things that Democrats don't like, when it, you know, after 2 days of using that as a device to gain positions supporting their side, they back away because they realize that everybody does that.
Everybody does it. But my issue with Trump again is he should have done it sooner. But I think Stephanie hit the nail on the head. He's new to Washington. He didn't really get it. Maybe he was too trusting.
And he appointed McCabe, the acting head of the FBI, too.
Right. And he let James Comey stay on, where clearly Comey should have been fired before Trump took off.
Bonnie, thank you very much for your call. I want to switch gears now and talk a little bit about. I'm going to kind of move our discussion to the broader political issue. In 2016. 100 million people did not vote. I want to get a sense from everybody. I want to weigh in on this discussion. There may be some actual agreement on this point. Why didn't 100 million people vote in 2016? And after every election, there's always stories about lamenting that not enough Americans got off their butts and went out and voted. David, lead the discussion here. Why do people not vote?
We live in a culture that's too apathetic and too uninformed. Many studies verify those two assertions. I'm also reminded, however, I mentioned my book during the introduction, that Jesse Jackson ran for president twice, once in 84, once in 88. And although he didn't win the nomination either time, historians and journalists all concede that he acted as a valet of millions of voters into the Democratic Party, black voters, but also Latino voters and Native American voters and students and gay voters, people who were at that point not involved in the political system. Mm-hmm. And it was largely because he spoke their language. He aggressively engaged them on issues that they found important. So we do have a 45% of the voting age population that does not vote, and it's often because they feel that the political system does not represent them and does not give them any reason to vote.
In 2016, however, a lot of those people, that number would have been larger had it not been for Bernie Sanders on the left and Donald Trump on the right. Do you think that among the 100 million people that did not vote, Josh, is there a big swath of that number that you think will still be pro-Trump? Or did they basically give their vote to Trump in 2016 and they're either going to ratify it or withdraw it? And that he's not going to expand his base very much this year?
If you're talking about, are you asking me, do I think that more people will vote than they did in 2016?
How do you cut into that 100 million people that didn't vote?
I mean, I hate to be cynical, but I don't think you do. I don't think either side is going to do much to cut into that. I think that there.
Does everybody agree with that?
I think last time we had a non-politician and we had a very flawed candidate, people could not hold their nose and bring themselves to vote for Hillary. It's going to be different now. They're going to double down. People are coming. They understand now. Trump ran on sizzle last time. He sold us a steak. Now he's got a record to run on. I don't know if any of you guys have been to a Trump rally. You're not going to tell me. I just went to the one in Milwaukee. 13,000 people inside, 3,000 outside watching in the cold on a teleprompter. And you're going to tell me that people are going to wake up. 100,000 people will not be staying home. They're going to come out and support our president because everything is at stake. All the great things he's done, they're trying to take it away from us.
You think they're all coming in one direction? They're going to support Trump.
Oh, they love
Trump. I want to hear from Peter and others, 1-800-723-8289. The question to you is, 100 million people didn't vote last time. Why do you think people don't vote? Is it because they're happy, or is it because they're really PO'd? Back shortly.
A new exhibit from the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Stay tuned. Rock on TV. Artifacts from the Jackson 5, Sonny and Cher, Elvis, Cyndi Lauper, ZZ Top, Eric Clapton, and more. Now at the Museum of Broadcast Communications, 360 North State Street, Chicago. From Bandstand to Gaga, let's rock on TV. For info and tickets, visit museum.tv.
You have the right to know. The right to know about culture. The right to know about the economy. The right to know about technology and to know about sports. You have the right to know about education and politics and the weather. You have the right to know what's happening abroad and in your backyard. But above all else, you have the right to know that this right is under attack, and we must work to protect it. Because in order to be free, we must be informed. Understand the threats. ProtectPressFreedom.org.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Thank you very much for joining us tonight on Beyond the Beltway. My question to Peter Hanna before the break. Peter, why don't you think 100 million people did not vote in 2016?
I think both candidates had a lot of flaws. I think obviously one is a, you know, reality TV show charlatan, and the other was someone hoisted by the establishment as the candidate in a sort of a fake primary. When you take that, I think a lot of people felt like, you know, their vote wasn't really going to be worth anything. And then you add on top of that this notion of power complacency, right? The Democrats had the White House for 8 years, you know, they felt comfortable with it. And some thought that, you know, what's the worst that could happen? And now, obviously, we're seeing that, you know, your vote matters, like voting has consequences. So, you know, I think we will have a record turnout in 2020.
Do you – okay, so that – all right. What is it that's being done now that would warrant a large number of people who didn't vote 4 years ago to come out? Because thus far, insofar as Bernie Sanders is concerned, his turnout in Iowa was down. The whole turnout was down. His personal turnout was down.
Mm-hmm.
His personal turnout in New Hampshire was down. The only turnout that was up was the Republican primary in New Hampshire, where the president got more votes than any incumbent president ever.
Well,
so what I'm saying is, is there a possibility that what Stephanie says is true, is that those people that didn't vote, they didn't buy Trump the first time around, but now they're going to go for Trump? Because Bernie Sanders, on the other side, numerically, he's not up to par from 4 years ago, and I don't see any other candidate out there that's likely to do it.
So Bernie Sanders ran against one person, obviously, in 2016. He's now running against, I don't know, like a dozen, realistically, like five or six. So obviously the vote is going to be more split.
Right.
And Iowa and New Hampshire are not good litmus tests for sort of turnout. These are older populations, more white populations. So I would hold back on any sort of judgment about turnout until we get through Nevada, South Carolina.
So you think the non-voters are black and brown people?
No. I just think that those particular states, which are combined, have a smaller population than New York City, are not good tests.
Bruce, also remember that.
Josh.
I wanted to say, when I talked about the 45% who didn't vote, that is historic. That has been that way for many years.
Yeah.
And I just don't see it changing a lot. But I think that the party that can pick off the most, more of those people than the other, obviously is going to put their candidate in a better position. And what we have now is that candidate Trump has been President Trump now for 3 years. A lot of people did think he was a charlatan, carnival barker. I said all of those things as a never-Trumper 4 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So I hear in some ways what Peter's saying, but now he has a record to run on. And so my hope is that Stephanie's right and that we're going to see a higher turnout.
Well, it's also important to remember the 2018 midterms, in which in the House races – the Republicans were devastated, and the turnout numbers for Democrats had increased at phenomenal rates from the perspective of a Democrat. So if there's a repeat of that in 2020, and even though those early states would contradict that forecast, you have to keep in mind that the fear of Trump, whether you would argue it's justified or irrational, and the rage and hostility against Trump, again, regardless of your opinion of that, is soaring among Democrats and progressives, and those are some pretty powerful incentives to get out and vote.
Is it soaring? In other words, of those 100 million people, do you think there's a significant number of them, that are just saying, ah, we finally have a multi-billionaire that we can vote for, and he's the mayor of New York City. I mean, is that what they're thriving for? It would seem to me that they would, just as 4 years ago, the enthusiasm was with Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders.
Right.
They had many of the same, they were touching many of the same chords.
Mm-hmm.
Many of Bernie Sanders supporters, not many, some Bernie Sanders supporters supported Donald Trump.
1 in 10 in the general election.
Yeah, they actually just basically decided the election in the four states where you won.
Yes, they did.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I need to address the 2018 thing. Since that time, we had how many years of wasting, you know, trying to prove that he colluded with Russia. So now they have to, on the other side of that, that whole thing fizzled. Nothing. They've been trying to trip him up one time after another. So now you've got Pelosi just completely let everyone down. She kept saying no impeachment. Then she bent the knee to that faction of her group that decided that we got to take him out. So now voters are thinking they wasted how many months, how many millions of dollars in trying to prove that the most corrupt, evil, dangerous person on the planet ever to hold this office, and you guys can't seem to catch him. And so what, while they're doing that, her constituents are stepping over human debris in her, where she lives, and Trump is getting it done. He's ticking off everything on his agenda. That's what they're going to have to face. 2018, yeah, that was bad. But now this is 2020, and so they've got, I think AOC, that group, coming after Pelosi because they promised impeachment was going to happen, and they got nothing.
Well, I was at a party last night with a very progressive San Francisco Democrat.
You should invite me next time.
And he said, I asked him, are things as bad as the news media is making things out to be in San Francisco? And he said, it's worse.
Yep.
And I have a good friend who lives in Seattle, who visits San Francisco a lot on business, who says that Seattle is actually worse than San Francisco. Now, who knows what's really going on? Just to add something,
I've been to both places in the past few months. Here I am. I can give you a first-hand account.
There he is, interrupting.
What did you say?
He's interrupting. He's the only one allowed to interrupt.
We have to pause, folks.
I know, but we can't.
I heard the exit music. When we come back, Peter is going to report on his observations of San Francisco.
It's madness.
1-800-723-8289. When we come back, we're also going to be talking about Michael Bloomberg. Is America ready for Michael Bloomberg? And what about those skeletons in his closet? Back shortly.
Do you worry about how much someone drinks?
Do you feel angry or depressed most of the time? Do you feel neglected or unloved?
Do you feel that if the drinker loved you, she or he would stop drinking?
If you answered yes to any of these questions, you are not alone.
Not everyone trapped by alcohol is an alcoholic.
Families and friends are suffering too.
Al-Anon and Alateen can help.
Call 1-866-200-0223 or visit alanon.org/help.
My name is Bobby. I'm a veteran and lost my leg to a roadside bomb. My victory was going from a wheelchair to becoming a weightlifting champion.
I'm Sam. I'm a veteran. My victory was finding a career that I could be proud of.
At DAV, we're on a mission, helping veterans of all generations get the benefits they've earned.
I'm Cece. My victory was finishing my education.
When America's veterans win, we all win. Help us support more victories for veterans. Go to DAV.org.
The economy is not working for everybody, especially those in jobs where unscrupulous businesses keep wages lower by hiring millions of illegal workers. Those businesses could use the government's E-Verify system to prevent illegal hiring, but they refuse. What's best for the country? Let businesses continue to hire illegal workers, or require E-Verify, raise wages, and recruit left-behind Americans? See what voters want at eVerifyWorks.com. Paid for by Numbers USA, because numbers
count.
GTG, BRB, OMW, be there in a few. You may think that these kinds of texts are fine because of their length, and you can easily send them at a stoplight. But no, answering one text can take your attention away from the road for 5 seconds. And traveling at 55 miles an hour, that's enough time to travel the length of a football field. Make good decisions. Don't text and drive.
Visit StopTextStopWrecks.org, a message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, Noise, and the Ad Council.
Chris Domine is a husband and a father. Chris is an athlete. Chris is even an Iron Man. But 10 years ago, Chris was facing a very different story because his kidneys were failing.
Basically, the doctor said, if you don't get a kidney transplant and if you don't do dialysis, you are going to die.
Fortunately, Chris received a second chance at life, made possible by an organ donor.
You know, your well-being changes from loss of hope to better times ahead.
More than 100 million people in America are registered organ, eye, and tissue donors. People of every age and ethnicity, because they believe it's the right thing to do. Imagine what you can make possible by leaving behind the gift of life. Learn more and sign up as an organ, eye, and tissue donor. Go to organdonor.gov. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Health Resources and Services Administration.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Thank you very much for hour number two. Joining us for hour number two of Beyond the Beltway. And we've got a full board of lights. Let's head to them right now. Let's go to Greg in Portland, Oregon. Go ahead. You're on the air, Greg.
Hey, hello. So on the apathetic people that are not voting before Trump, I believe that it was because there was nothing in it for the people. Actually, the Democrats and the Republicans, as much as they fought, they were actually, I think, had the same goal, and that was to use promises that were actually lies to stay in power and use their corrupt ways to keep in power and make money just for themselves, for the political groups in Washington on both sides.
Mm-hmm.
Now that Trump has come into power, he is revealing that corruptness and started the process of removing that portion of the corruptness of the political system.
Do you believe then, if we were to look ahead to November, because you said that maybe they felt that there was nothing in it for them, when you have candidates that are going to be promising either Medicare for all or free college tuition, do you, as some of the Bernie Sanders supporters have suggested, or Elizabeth Warren to some extent, do you think the fact that people might be getting something at least perceived for free in their mind, that will turn more people out? In other words, if people thought that of 100 million people, if they thought they would get a free college education, is that going to drive them to the polls?
Well, I think that's part of the promises that are actually lies in many ways. Ultimately, yes, to your question, I think it'll probably bring a few out on the Democratic side. But again, they're promises that are actually lies. And what is that saying about people that are not going to be pulling their own weight and all they want is free stuff and they're not going to contribute to the American society when all they do is take?
To me, it means that maybe within those 100 million people, there may be a large percentage of people that really don't care about participating. They want theirs and they're not going to contribute. And, you know, just as they don't contribute to who is elected president, they don't contribute in any way. And that may be one of the answers. And if somebody's saying, hey, here's a free college education, that may drive people to the polls. I want to hear from our progressives whether you think
I paid more money in federal income tax last year than Amazon, Netflix, FedEx, the NFL, and GE combined. So if the caller or anyone else is going to talk about making an investment in the country, why don't we have corporations who are profiting in the hundreds of millions or billions make an investment in the country before you come at poor and working people looking for an affordable college education or looking for a way to obtain insulin if they're diabetic so they don't die from the lack of it before you, you know.
Josh, let's hear from the Republicans now.
Yeah, you know, I don't think that's going to work. I think America is still a center-right country when it comes to work ethic. And I think that Greg got it right that, you know, people, these handouts, they're tired of it.
Who's getting the handouts?
And to be fair, I'm going to say something that I agree with you in part about the corporate handouts. Mm-hmm. That is disgusting that those if it's true that they don't pay income taxes, that's crazy. We need a fair tax system. But all of this free stuff that the Democrats are promising, I think most people recognize it for what it is.
Stephanie, what about the point about corporations not paying their fair share or anything?
Well, when you say fair share, I'm thinking about the fair tax they're imposing here in Illinois. I'm going to have a flash. I'm going to pass out. But we know when they are taxed, they're going to pass it on to the consumer. We know that. And we talk about all the good things Amazon and those companies are doing, providing jobs and making sure people are working. And it's a great, you know, capitalism is the greatest thing, has saved a lot of people from poverty and everything else that's wrong with the world. We know socialism has never worked, but it doesn't stop the left from trying to push that agenda down our throat. And when we think about what we're facing in November 2020, all those candidates on the other side are trying to undo all the great things that Donald Trump has done so far that he's been in since he's been in office. They're going to undo, you know, everything. And name one of those candidates. I would love to hear from our friends here on the left. Which one of those candidates has a chance of beating Trump? Because he's putting Americans first. He's putting our interests first. And where they're going to put illegals, because remember, illegal brown is the new black vote. And that's what they're going after. They're going to give them all these resources and take them from hardworking Americans. So which one of those candidates can beat Trump? Not one.
Peter.
Well, I mean, I can't even comprehend what I just heard, but I'll speak to Greg's point. Generally, you know, if I were going to get free health care, it wouldn't suddenly make me just sit at home and get prescriptions or go to the – I mean, I think
would
one
it make
day –
you vote?
Yeah, it would make me vote.
The question is, how do you get 100 million people? How do you drive them to the polls? And I'm just saying that one of the reasons why – I mean, I guess another – a broader question would be the people who don't vote, are they dumb or are they smart?
I'll respond to your point. I think the people who don't vote because voting in the past has never helped them. I had an Uber driver the other day taking me to the airport, and we got to talking about politics, and he'd been a citizen for something like 35 years. He'd never voted once. And I asked him why. He said, I come from a country where voting doesn't really matter. And everything I've seen in America showed me voting doesn't really matter.
Blue Chicago,
we had a good conversation overall. I think what this election has to be about, if there is any hope of beating Donald Trump, who's riding the benefit of a great economy, you know, with massive air quotes, it has to be about turnout. It has to be a massive turnout. And what can motivate people to turn out? Not, oh, I'm going to have a free healthcare plan or I'm going to have free college. It's the idea that the country will become more equal, that you won't have people going bankrupt because they're paying medical bills. You won't have people going to their 40s and 50s with immense student loan debt. When most of the Western world, most of the countries we call wealthy countries, education, college education is not prohibitively expensive.
But if you're prohibitively expensive in the United States until the late 1980s.
But if you're talking about, I'm going to speak to your point. If the list of corporations that don't pay any taxes and everybody
federal income
tax that we're talking about, this is what Elizabeth Warren rattles off, and she rattles it off more than Bernie. But Bernie is also going after billionaires. So my question is, along comes Michael Bloomberg, a billionaire.
Mm-hmm.
How does he become the guy that rallies these 100 million people to turn out for him? Or the other question I would say, and this is to the Republicans, is he the guy that gets suburban women who don't like, many of whom don't like Donald Trump, who showed up in 2018, is he the guy that gets them out because he's perceived to be the more moderate person?
Yes.
Or, got a lot of questions here, or because of all the issues that are now, stories that are coming out about his womanizing and his treatment of women, does it turn suburban Republican women against Bloomberg, who he thought was part of his base?
Bruce, let me answer it this way. Bloomberg, if he is the candidate, will get suburban women out. The problem is he's not going to get the Sanders crowd. They're just going to stay home again.
That's true.
And so that is the problem, and that's the dilemma.
Are the suburban Republican women a larger number?
No.
We're talking about numbers.
No, they're not a larger number.
Okay, when we come back, we're going to talk about the likelihood of him getting black votes or any Democrat getting black votes. And we will also take more calls. Got a lot of them on the line. I'm Bruce Dumont. Thank you for joining us tonight from Coast to Ghost.
A new exhibit from the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Stay tuned. Rock on TV. Artifacts from the Jackson 5, Sonny and Cher, Elvis, Cyndi Lauper, ZZ Top, Eric Clapton, and more. Now at the Museum of Broadcast Communications, 360 North State Street, Chicago. From Bandstand to Gaga, let's rock on TV. For info and tickets, visit museum.tv.
You have the right to know. The right to know about culture. The right to know about the economy. The right to know about technology and to know about sports. You have the right to know about education and politics and the weather. You have the right to know what's happening abroad and in your backyard. But above all else, you have the right to know that this right is under attack, and we must work to protect it. Because in order to be free, we must be informed. Understand the threats. ProtectPressFreedom.org.
We're still on back in Chicago. Let me ask our progressives. Who is your candidate for president right now, David?
I'm anyone but Trump at this point. I was a supporter of Elizabeth Warren.
What happened?
And I mean, I still am. I'll likely still vote for her if she's still in the race when they get to the Indiana primary, because I'm over
Indian
the border.
Primary?
Indiana.
Oh, I thought you'd say Indiana.
But it doesn't look like she's likely to succeed. So,
who's your second choice?
I'm not sure. But
Peter.
This is the first election in which I'm an entirely loyal partisan. I will vote for whoever they nominate. If it's Peter, I would gladly vote for Peter.
Can say that forever.
Yeah.
Yes, I would vote for you, Josh, over Donald Trump. Oh, I would feel
Peter,
less
who,
fearful
who,
about
Peter.
The
who is it? Who is your choice?
Speaking purely personally, I think I've been on the show before. I've said that I took a good look at Elizabeth Warren, Kamala Harris, Bernie Sanders, everyone, and after looking at everyone, looking at their record, I think the choice has become more and more clear. And I think Bernie Sanders is the best candidate, not just as a Democrat. But just as an American, I think his record speaks for itself. He's been saying the same thing forever and ever. And I think one of the responses he's given before is really, I think, important because, yes, America will never be a communist country or a pure socialist country or anything like that. But what we have right now is a form of socialism. We have a form of socialism where the government takes the money from the people and redistributes it. Right now, it's being redistributed to corporations largely and to the very wealthy who have the means and ability to form whatever life they want. And I think what you see from Bernie Sanders is if we're going to take a little bit of that money that we're giving back to companies, giving back to wealthy, and start using it to stuff to sort of give people things like healthcare, I think there will come a time when people will look back and say, I can't believe that we commoditized and profited from human health. Yeah.
Peter,
you've said that Bernie Sanders has basically been saying the same thing for many, many years. Are you concerned that his legislative record of success is minimal on the issues that he talks about, and that after 30-plus years in Congress, maybe there should have been a few more things with his name on it that would have dealt with at least a portion of all the stuff that he talks about?
It would irritate these guys and maybe everyone if I rattled off the stuff that he's done successfully legislatively. But let me just say this. Obama.
Talk about health care.
I mean, health care has been a disaster in this country for a long time. The ACA was largely drafted by the Heritage Foundation and was a complete, miscue.
Free college.
What Bernie Sanders.
Free college.
Free college.
I'm talking about the things that he talks about. What has he
he's
done?
He's one senator.
What is his?
He's one senator, and he's been advocating for this stuff forever. I think as president with a bully pulpit and hopefully with a Senate majority, it can get done.
It's going to need more than a Senate majority to impose socialism and communism on this country. Look, this is the same guy who honeymooned in the Soviet Union, who I posted a couple of days ago, gave a lecture several decades ago in which he was lamenting in which he was, I'm sorry, praising the Cuban Revolution and lamenting that we didn't have the same thing happen here. I mean, there's going to be so much of that stuff dug up. I really hope it's Sanders. I may even cross over, and this may be the first thing Peter and I agree on tonight, but I may cross over and vote for Bernie Sanders
in the primary,
because I want to see Bernie Sanders. I mean, you're going to look at a George McGovern versus Nixon.
Hillary Clinton really wanted to see Donald Trump. I want to tell you, Hillary Clinton.
He is going to turn off so many of the key swing voters.
Sanders is the riskiest candidate of the group.
Why, in your view?
Well, if I was his political consultant, I would have told him a long time ago to stop using the word socialism. It's too loaded.
He's a socialist.
One can play games with language without playing games with principles. But that being said, every major industrial economy in the world combines capitalism and socialism. We already have socialism in this country. The argument is, should we have more of it or should we have less of it? But the word comes with so much baggage that it's probably not politically savvy for him to invoke it so consistently. But just speaking, I would gladly vote for Bernie. I agree with him on nearly everything. But I do share Josh's concerns, although I suppose for Josh there are hopes, that some of that baggage will weigh him down in a general election.
I want to let you respond to this first. Is Amy Klobuchar the most electable Democrat in your view, Stephanie?
I honestly, being that they've been after Trump since he came down the escalator, I cannot believe the lot of candidates that they came up with. None of them can beat Donald Trump, and it disappoints me. I'm not threatened by her or anyone. They can actually wrap three of them together, and they still wouldn't beat Trump because he's putting America first. His policies have already gone into effect. People are living. What is the poll saying? That 90% of the people love their lifestyle and what they're living as a result of his policies. I'm not afraid of her.
Far. They don't say as
about
a result.
Amy Klobuchar. Why do you answer every question
I'm sorry
Donald
about
Trump?
Amy. I'm not threatened by anyone on that side.
I want to ask our Democrats. I think, is Amy Klobuchar the most electable?
Hell no.
Didn't even mention her.
Absolutely not.
Why not?
I mean, Amy Klobuchar, here's the thing. We say, like, Bernie Sanders is left, far left, radical.
Well, he's a socialist.
You know, Donald Trump is the most radical candidate president ever. Amy Klobuchar is so far to the right. Her criminal justice record is atrocious. And I think just today, interviewed at Telemundo, she couldn't even name the president of Mexico. So, no, I would prefer someone a little bit more informed than her.
Hillary Clinton.
You're saying that she was a right-wing federal attorney?
I'm saying her criminal justice record was awful, yes.
Hillary Clinton.
As a prosecutor, it was terrible.
Hillary Clinton's unfavorable numbers were worse than Trump's, and yet she lost the presidency because of the Electoral College by 80,000 votes combined over three states.
Right.
So I think that any of these candidates, including Bernie Sanders, could defeat Donald Trump.
Donald Trump now has a record to run on.
Right.
We have a great economy. It is a great record. It is. Donald Trump is probably the greatest president of my lifetime, and I didn't think I would be saying that.
Wow.
I mean, it is incredible what he has done with the economy, taking on these trade deals. His list of accomplishments.
Look at the State of the Union.
Of course. That's why we have elections.
Look at the State of the Union.
You completely disagree. You were raising your eyebrows when Josh was speaking. You completely disagree with Josh. But the point is, we're going to have an election.
Yeah.
And as I think David just said, it's going to probably come down to about three or four states and about 70 or 80,000 people.
The McGovern map is over.
And we're going to see who shows up.
The country's too polarized partisanship is too entrenched. We're not going to have landslide victories like Reagan and Mondale.
By the way, if Trump had lost the three states, Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania, it would have been 269-269. So he came very close in New Hampshire.
Is Michael Bloomberg a stronger candidate in the state of Florida?
Yes.
That will tip that state likely to the Democrats.
He is a stronger candidate in that state, but I don't think he's a stronger candidate in the upper Midwest states at all.
And I agree with Josh on that.
I think that you could tip Minnesota to the Republicans with Michael Bloomberg potentially.
What about Klobuchar?
Klobuchar, I have to say, look, I don't think any of them can beat him, and I agree with Stephanie that I'm surprised they couldn't have come up with somebody better. But a Bloomberg Klobuchar ticket, to me, is their most competitive ticket, because you're combining moderates, two moderates who can appeal to the upper Midwest that
Peter
way with Klobuchar.
Peter knows Bloomberg because he was from New York.
Oh.
Yes.
You're not a fan of Michael Bloomberg's.
No, I am not.
Why not? Well, first of all, you're a fan of Bernie Sanders. So
yes.
From an anecdotal yes. standpoint, tell us a little bit about what you knew from the mayor when he was your mayor.
Yeah, well, I mean, if Bloomberg were actually a better candidate, I would say I'd support him. But he turns out he's one of the worst candidates ever. I mean, well, his track record was pretty well known in New York before he became mayor. He wanted to run as a Democrat, and they basically wouldn't let him. So he ran as a Republican, even though he was very socially, quote unquote, liberal. But once he was mayor, he demonstrated a lot of practices and policies that I think would be terrible as president, like the stop and frisk policy. Everything he did in terms of law enforcement would turn out to be some sort of strangely racist civil liberties nightmare. In addition, he has these sort of kind of petty dictator tendencies, the desire to ban all sugary drinks in New York, to kind of this weirdly paternalistic mentality. I had friends who worked at Morgan Stanley, Goldman Sachs, like top, you know, financial firms. And we all, before he even became mayor, this came up. There was a book called The Portable Bloomberg that his employees had written over the years of just weird and crazy zany things that Bloomberg would say. And I actually got to see it years ago, and I'm sure it'll come up now. It contains all sorts of crazy things about women, about sex, about black people, about immigrants. The man is a nightmare in terms of a candidate, and it's disgusting to me that the DNC allowed him to buy a place on the stage.
However, here's one caveat.
We agree.
He's running the shrewdest and most effective campaign, partially because he can afford to do so.
Yes.
But his tactic of blitzing the public with these short ads that pack an emotional punch
right.
is wise and effective because it assumes that most voters aren't following politics closely day to day.
That's true.
That's right.
Whereas Warren, who was the candidate I preferred, one of her problems was she spoke as if the majority of Americans were carefully reviewing all of the policy proposals. And if they were doing so, they would see that hers were the most astute and the most thorough, but most weren't paying attention. So Bloomberg is also capitalizing on the unprecedented level of fear and hostility toward Trump on the Democratic side.
And
but he's also
like that.
Commercials.
He's also obviously a smart guy.
Yes.
But I don't know how you launch a presidential campaign seeking the Democratic nomination when you have to know that the story that appears in today's Washington Post about his relations with women in the workplace, he didn't harass anybody, but he certainly made it a very unpleasant culture, that's a story.
He was smart enough to stay out of Iowa.
The economy is not working for everybody, especially those in jobs where unscrupulous businesses keep wages lower by hiring millions of illegal workers. Those businesses could use the government's E-Verify system to prevent illegal hiring, but they refuse. What's best for the country? Let businesses continue to hire illegal workers, or require E-Verify, raise wages, and recruit left-behind Americans? See what voters want at eVerifyWorks.com. Paid for by Numbers USA, because numbers count.
Every year, millions of Americans use opioids to manage pain. And reliance on opioids has led to the worst drug crisis in American history. That's why the CDC recommends safer alternatives, like physical therapy, to manage pain. Physical therapists treat pain through movement, hands-on care, and patient education. No warning labels required. When it comes to your health, you have a choice. Choose physical therapy. Visit MoveForwardPT.com to find a physical therapist in your area.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Thank you very much for joining us. Let's go to South Carolina, where Sam is listening to us in Myrtle Beach. Go ahead, Sam.
Yes, Bruce. The Democrats are in a bad place with Bernie Sanders. If he's the nominee, he's going to get blown out. And if he's not the nominee, his people are going to be so angry that there's going to be no healing that rift, I don't think.
David, what do you think of that? I want to get everybody's that is the big concern
that's an accurate assessment.
Very real.
That's the dilemma that faces the Democratic Party because Bernie Sanders does carry risks as a candidate. But if he wins the most votes, obviously he should be the nominee and I will support him. And however, if he doesn't win, even if he loses in an entirely legitimate, credible, honest way, he will have a large percentage of his supporters who will refuse to vote for anyone else.
So Sam does present
a threat to the Democratic Party.
And also, Sam, we have to remember that Democratic primary voters selected George McGovern, Michael Dukakis, John Kerry. They were all selected by the voters. And by the way, Republican primary voters selected Mitt Romney. They selected John McCain. They selected Bob Dole. So both parties have a very good track record of nominating people through their process that really have no popular appeal when it comes to a general election.
It's difficult.
I mean, but again, you can't take that away from
them. Obama, for example, that's a once-in-a-generation politician.
As well as Reagan.
I want to say this. Sam nailed it. In one sentence, Sam nailed the Democrats' dilemma, and that was the Republicans' dilemma in 2016. Stephanie and I were never Trumpers.
Yeah, no way.
We eventually came
along. Who were you for?
Bruce?
Originally.
Oh,
one second.
Marco Rubio. Oh,
Rubio, and you were for?
I was Ted Cruz.
Ted Cruz. Okay, go ahead, Sam.
Yeah, one thing I want to say about Bernie Sanders, I think he is one of the biggest frauds that's ever been. If you look at, there's a company called O-Town Media that he started with family friends and family members.
Mm-hmm.
And they ran $82 million, supposedly, in advertising and campaign consulting through that company in 2016 and charged 15% commissions.
Did they work with Trump University?
And then Bernie buys a lake house on a sports car. Mm-hmm. So, and it's the same thing with AOC. You know, she wanted everybody to chip in on her staff and everybody chip in their money so they'd be paid equally, but I bet you she didn't chip in hers.
Amen.
Wow. Sam, let me ask you this question.
That's a baseless assumption. That's just a
Sam, you changed my mind, Sam. Not voting for Bernie. Thanks.
My question is this, Sam, to you. You're calling from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. What is your assessment? We understand where you how you feel about Bernie Sanders, but would you care to make any assessment as to the Democratic likely winner a couple of weeks from now?
If Bernie doesn't get to where he needs to be in delegates, I got to think that there's going to be so many people pushing Bloomberg. It's either going to be Bloomberg or Bernie.
Okay.
I think that's accurate. Klobuchar has
all the charisma of the proverbial paint drying.
Bloomberg has no abundance of charisma either. He's sort of a charisma vacuum.
He's got the dough and the Democrats are desperate.
Right. He's got $60 billion.
Sam, listen, thanks very much for calling. Good to hear from South Carolina tonight, okay?
Thanks,
Sam.
Let's
now head west to Austin, Texas, where Kathy is listening to us on KLBJ. Go ahead.
Hello there. How are you?
Fine. How are you?
I'm doing well. Earlier in the show, you were talking about, or you were asking, if suburban women would vote for Trump. And mm-hmm. I am a suburban woman in Austin, Texas, which is very liberal. And I did vote for Trump in 2016. I'm actually a registered Democrat, have always been a Democrat. But because of the way the party's platform has turned so progressive, I decided to give Trump a try. And yes, he does have a record that he's running on this time, and I'll vote for him again. You know, there's a lot of people who are Trump supporters who cannot talk about it mm-hmm. because of the repercussion that we get from liberal Democrats in the areas where we live.
Right.
I can't even put a Trump sign in my yard, or I won't. Because I live in a very liberal city. So there's a lot of Trump supporters out there who are kind of under the covers here. And the only time that people really know that we're out there is when we can vote.
Kathy, let me ask you this question, because the general perception of Trump's problem with women, which is stated by Democrats and perpetuated in many cases by the national news media, and that is his personality. He's too rough. He's too gruff. He's rude, crude, and socially unattractive. That's the way the perception of Donald Trump is. And again, he feeds that image himself with a lot of things that he says and the way he does things. And the general thought is that women back away from that. There may be a lot of men that are macho and they like that because he's rock 'em, sock 'em and calls it like it is. But that women, on the other hand, they shy away from that. They don't like that rough and tumble, bare knuckles, political discussions and attitude. And you add that, some of the charges that have been made against the president and his relationship with women over the years. How do you react? First of all, is there any part of that concern that you have heard articulated by your friends or neighbors who maybe are not going to be supporting Donald Trump?
My friends who are not going to vote for him won't vote for him for all the reasons that you've talked about. But, you know, I live in Texas. I'm used to men being rough and speaking their minds and going after things. Politics is not polite. And through all of these years, and I'm an older woman, so I've been voting for a long time. But through all these years, you know, we've always thought that all these politicians had to be polite people and negotiate in polite ways. But what we're finding out is, you know, what has been going on behind the scenes. And there's been so much corruption that we have heard about, you know, and so many things that have not been truthful that have gone on in politics, that in my mind, in my opinion, I don't have a problem with the way Trump is handling himself.
Stay on the line. I want to ask Stephanie the same question. My description of the at least the perception that media perpetuates that Donald Trump is a turnoff to a lot of women. Would you acknowledge that exists at least somewhere within your sphere of influence?
Well, again, I'm a suburban housewife, and I wasn't turned off, especially that whole clip of him on the bus. That was a moment where he didn't know he was on mic, and just because someone says it doesn't make it so. So I'm not going to go along with that.
Rough and tumble.
He said it.
Just because
locker room talk all the time. I'm not going to be so taken aback by that. I agree with what she was talking about, that he's a strong man that speaks his mind. And so we have this whole thing going on with Bloomberg, kind of similar, but because he's running as a Democrat, he's going to be forgiven, it's going to be forgotten, it's no big deal. But it's okay to have someone that's speaking their mind, especially when it comes to politics. So many people placate. Like, if you listen to the right now, Bloomberg is running an ad on local Chicago radio that says that, yes, I pull myself up in the American dream, but if I were black, I probably wouldn't have been able to do that. That ticks me off to no end. Pandering like Hillary did to the black community, that she carries hot sauce in her purse. Stop lying to us. Stop placating to us and talk to us, because black Americans have the same desires as white Americans. We want good schools. We want safe neighborhoods, and we want opportunities. And for the Democrat Party to promise us decade after decade they're going to take care of us and look after us, and when you live in a city like Chicago and you know that's not true, I like what Donald Trump, what did he say in 2016 to the black voters? What do you have to lose? And it's absolutely nothing, because the Democrats have given us nothing.
Peter, I just want to ask a question.
Peter,
do you have daughters?
Yes, I do.
If you heard one of your daughter's boyfriends or husbands or something say what Donald Trump said, would you just say,
well, I don't know. I'm not throwing. I love my father. I'm not throwing my father under the bus. But he talked like that all. That's how men talk in locker rooms.
That's what men.
You know what? If my daughter's husband spoke like
time
that,
time is running low. Uh-huh. I just want to know if you. It's a simple question. If you overheard your daughter speaking as Trump did about grabbing women, your daughter's husband or boyfriend speaking like Trump did about grabbing women by the whatever, would you be cool with it?
I wouldn't be cool with it.
Yeah,
but
it would be kind of disgusting and vulgar.
But that was a dirty, low-down October surprise trick. They had that tape all along trying to make people not vote for him, and they still voted for him.
There's a difference between president and family.
Kathy in Austin, Texas, thank you very much for calling with your opinion, okay?
It's not.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Go ahead, David.
Volume and crudity and cruelty does not project strength. To call Donald Trump a strong man assumes that strength means picking on the weak and the vulnerable, whether it's mocking a disabled journalist over his disability. It's on video.
It's fake news.
Whether it's
out of context. But go ahead.
Whether it's mocking women over their appearance include, you know, his political opponents' wives, whether it's mocking everyone's appearance, whether it's mocking people over their history with mental illness, as he did with Ted Cruz's wife. That's not strength. That's weakness. And that's behavior of a bully.
Josh, Donald Trump
that's
has
behavior
proved
of a pathetic
his,
person.
Donald Trump has proved his strength in his 3 years as president of the United States. What we're talking about is stuff that happened when he was a candidate
right.
and before. And there is a difference.
Litigated.
And it's already
How about
been litigated.
Someone
and, there's,
who's dead,
and there's a
saying
difference
a congressman
between,
is in hell.
Between
is that strong?
Inviting someone like
That's
Donald
strength?
Trump into your family. I wouldn't want Donald Trump to be dating my daughter, for instance, okay, at all, or somebody like that, versus the president of the United States. And what a record. What a record he has.
Gotta pause. 1-800-723-8289.
A new exhibit from the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Stay tuned. Rock on TV. Artifacts from the Jackson 5, Sonny and Cher, Elvis, Cyndi Lauper, ZZ Top, Eric Clapton, and more. Now at the Museum of Broadcast Communications, 360 North State Street, Chicago. From Bandstand to Gaga, let's rock on TV. For info and tickets, visit museum.tv.
You have the right to know. The right to know about culture, the right to know about the economy, the right to know about technology and to know about sports. You have the right to know about education and politics and the weather. You have the right to know what's happening abroad and in your backyard. But above all else, you have the right to know that this right is under attack and we must work to protect it. Because in order to be free, we must be informed. Understand the threats. ProtectPressFreedom.org.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Thank you very much. You were say what you just said. You said what? You like to come on the show because?
Well, this is a safe space to support Trump.
In Chicago.
Yeah, in Chicago. It's not very many of those places you can do that.
And I just have to say something on a personal level. This is cool to be on with a black conservative and a Jewish conservative. I mean, people hate us in our community.
Yes, we can't go to Thanksgiving dinner without being attacked.
Right, yeah. And so I think it's great, Bruce. Yeah. I appreciate it.
Very good. A truly diverse show.
Well, we hope so. And even Peter's here.
Yeah. Even me.
We take immigrants that happily came to this country. We love
Egypt, a U.S. citizen, successful attorney, David Masiotra. Are you Italian? I've never asked you this. Is that the derivation of your name?
Yes, it is. I'm Italian and Serbian American.
Okay.
Oh, very good.
By the way, love it. We're going to go to a different subject. We have a full board of lights, and to those people who are on the phone, stay on the phone. Because when our show officially ends tonight on radio, on the radio stations that you're listening to, and on YouTube as well, we're going to keep going. Since we're live on Facebook, we're going to kind of fade to black for just a couple of seconds, and then we're going to come back, and we're going to take the calls that we have because they've been waiting, and we'll carry on our conversation, and we'll see how long we go. We're not going a long time, but again, we're going to try something new that we've not done, and because we are live on Facebook and we're live on YouTube, we can do these things now, and again, the radio people will leave us, but we'll continue to have our conversation. You know, one of the stories that we've briefly talked about is Michael Bloomberg, and again, last week, one of the issues was whether or not Michael Bloomberg's stop and frisk policies when he was mayor of New York would make it very difficult for him to pick up and attract African-American voters during the Democratic primary. And then what is broken during this week and in a huge story in the Washington Post today, if you've not read it, you may find it very interesting. It's a rather devastating story about Michael Bloomberg and his relationship with women who have worked for his company. He had allegedly a very dangerous culture of treatment of women in the Bloomberg company. So again, it's a story that will likely dominate the news for the next week. And again, we want to mention something. And again, this is for a lot of conservatives. And you know, on this program, if you're a regular listener, we have frequently taken a swipe at the New York Times or the Washington Post because we think that they're in bed with the Democrats and they're out to get Trump. And again, obviously, I think virtually at least a couple of times a week, they're demonstrating their anti-Trump anti-Trump bias both of those newspapers. But I do want to say that the stop and frisk story is one that originated from the New York Times, and the story about Michael Bloomberg and his problems with women, at least in the workplace, is a Washington Post story. So these are two traditional liberal Democratic publications that are now communicating and letting the American people know about some two very difficult things for Michael Bloomberg to talk about on his way to the White House. And again, let's take a listen to what Michael Bloomberg had to say, first of all, on the issue of stop and frisk. This is from a taped recording from several years ago in 2015. He's addressing the Aspen Institute. Somebody had their little tape recorder going. And this is what Michael Bloomberg had to say about the controversial stop and frisk program in New York City while he was mayor.
95% of your murders and murderers and murder victims fit in one MO. You can just take the description, Xerox it, and pass it out to all the cops. They are male minorities, 15 to 21. You put all the cops in the minority neighborhoods. Yes, that's true. Why we do it? Because that's where all the crime is. And the way you get the guns out of kids' hands is to throw them against the wall and frisk them.
Josh Cantrell, that comment has put him behind the eight ball with a lot of Democrats and a lot of people in the media. They were aghast at those comments. The president's first response was he lashed out in a tweet saying that this demonstrated that Bloomberg was a total racist. It's one of the few tweets that the president pulled back. Did he pull back because there are too many supporters of Donald Trump that agree with that policy?
I don't know why he pulled back, but I suspect that there are supporters of Donald Trump that agree with tough policing policies that have saved countless African-American lives, lives of Hispanic kids, and lives of other minority groups who are in disadvantaged neighborhoods. So I think that the original tweet calling Bloomberg's policies racist, Trump realized was wrong.
Well, he called Bloomberg totally racist.
Well, that Bloomberg is not racist, okay? You can say a lot about Bloomberg, but he's not racist. And I don't
Peter,
think
do you agree with that?
I don't think Trump believes that.
Do I agree with – I think Bloomberg is a racist. And I think what we heard it's actually really interesting. There was some speculation that the Bloomberg campaign itself leaked that audio to get ahead of it because they thought there was going to be a bigger expose or a bigger story coming out. I think he is racist. I think stop and frisk is a policy. Of course, it's been found by courts to be unconstitutional because it is. It disproportionately targets people of color. And I think the way it was implemented in New York did not produce or yield the results that I think some others who advocate for it now would say it does. And the last thing
Is that a policy that you personally think is racist? The policy itself.
Yes, I do think it's racist, and I think it's unconstitutional. And I think at the end of the day, there are a million better ways to achieve the desired result.
Well, I would love to weigh in on that when we come back.
Give us a quick response.
Well,
10 seconds.
It's so much is in that. When we talk about 70% of black children being born without dads, 50 years ago it was the opposite. 70% of black families were intact, loving homes. So as a result of that, we have more boys and young men angry, uneducated on the streets. So disproportionately, we are committing more of the crimes, and we are the victims disproportionately. That's just the result. And you live in Chicago, you read the paper every Monday, you know what's going on.
On that note, I want to thank our Republicans for joining us tonight. They are Josh Cantrell and Stephanie
Trussell. That's okay.
Stephanie Trussell. I'm sorry, Stephanie. And also our Democrats, David Masiotra and Peter Hanna. They have joined us. And again, a reminder, if you're listening to this program right now, we're going to say farewell to you. If you're watching us on Facebook Live or on YouTube, stay right where you are. We're going to dip to black in a couple of seconds, and then we'll be back and we have a full board of lights. We'll take more calls at 1-800-723-8289. I'm Bruce Dumont. Thanks for joining us tonight.
Do you worry about how much someone drinks?
Do you feel angry or depressed most of the time? Do you feel neglected or unloved?
Do you feel that if the drinker loved you, she or he would stop drinking?
If you answered yes to any of these questions, you are not alone.
Not everyone trapped by alcohol is an alcoholic.
Families and friends are suffering too.
Al-Anon and Alateen can help.
Call 1-866-200-0223 or visit alanon.org/help.
My name is Bobby. I'm a veteran and lost my leg to a roadside bomb. My victory was going from a wheelchair to becoming a weightlifting champion.
I'm Sam. I'm a veteran. My victory was finding a career that I could be proud of.
At DAV, we're on a mission, helping veterans of all generations get the benefits they've earned.
I'm Cece. My victory was finishing my education.
When America's veterans win, we all win. Help us support more victories for veterans. Go to DAV.org.
The economy is not working for everybody, especially those in jobs where unscrupulous businesses keep wages lower by hiring millions of illegal workers. Those businesses could use the government's E-Verify system to prevent illegal hiring, but they refuse. What's best for the country? Let businesses continue to hire illegal workers, or require E-Verify, raise wages, and recruit left-behind Americans? See what voters want at eVerifyWorks.com. Paid for by Numbers USA, because numbers count.
GTG, BRB, OMW, be there in a few. You may think that these kinds of texts are fine because of their length, and you can easily send them at a stoplight. But no, answering one text can take your attention away from the road for 5 seconds. And traveling at 55 miles an hour, that's enough time to travel the length of a football field. Make good decisions. Don't text and drive.
Visit StopTextStopWrecks.org, a message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, Noise, and the Ad Council.
Chris Domine is a husband and a father. Chris is an athlete. Chris is even an Iron Man. But 10 years ago, Chris was facing a very different story because his kidneys were failing.
Basically, the doctor said, if you don't get a kidney transplant and if you don't do dialysis, you are going to die.
Fortunately, Chris received a second chance at life, made possible by an organ donor.
You know, your well-being changes. From loss of hope to better times ahead.
More than 100 million people in America are registered organ, eye, and tissue donors. People of every age and ethnicity, because they believe it's the right thing to do. Imagine what you can make possible by leaving behind the gift of life. Learn more and sign up as an organ, eye, and tissue donor. Go to organdonor.gov. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Health Resources and Services Administration.